This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by our friends over at Northwest Safe. We got a lot to get to. It's happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Tom, I would love it if you would push that button right there.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
So all of us woke up this morning to hear that the president has officially declared an emergency at the southern border. An emergency that he deems necessary to declare so he can free up some funds for a border wall, despite the bipartisan agreement that passed the Senate and the House yesterday that he is signing, that he has signed, that gives him about $1.375 billion for about 55 miles worth of what they're calling a barrier, not a wall, but a barrier, even though a wall is a barrier, but whatever, it doesn't matter. He's not happy. He's not satisfied. He wants some more. And he gave his passionate defense early this morning. I was listening to it live on the Saul Spady Show as it was happening. And he was a little all over the place, as he normally is in cases like this, where he's so passionate about a topic, he'll go from point to point to point, kind of haphazardly. But he did make a point to remind everyone that declaring a national emergency is not new. In fact, if you go back and you look at just the last few presidents, all of them declared states of emergency on a whole host of issues, not quite similar to what's going on at the border. But again, this is nothing new.
I'm going to be signing a national emergency, and it's been signed many times before. It's been signed by other presidents from 1977 or so. It gave the presidents the power. There's rarely been a problem. They sign it. Nobody cares. I guess they weren't very exciting, but nobody cares. They sign it for far less important things in some cases, in many cases.
Now, some folks are already saying, oh, this is an impeachable offense. It is not. Normal people don't think that this is an impeachable offense, including most people of Congress. They might use the I word because they think it's going to scare folks and it's going to contribute to the brand of what they want to declare an out-of-control president. This is not impeachable at all. He's simply declaring a case of emergency. Now, it's going to be challenged in court, and the courts will decide. He's not spending money that he doesn't yet have. He's making this declaration before he's even able to get any of the funding in place. It's going to be challenged in court, and a judge will decide whether or not this is running afoul of his rights as president. Now, the executive is granted a whole host of power. I don't know whether or not it grants this. Based on some of the research I've done, I tend to lean in the no department. But let's see what the actual case is. He's got lawyers on his side for the White House, for the administration, who are going to make their case. I'm willing to hear it out because the truth is we do need more money to go into the case at the border. Whether or not we want to call it an emergency is immaterial to me. I don't care. I said from the beginning, it doesn't matter whether or not you think it's an emergency or I think it's an emergency or the president does. Doesn't matter because that is a subjective perspective, right? In fact, later on in the show, 5:30, Congressman Adam Smith is going to come on and we're going to talk about this. And I'm assuming from his perspective, it's not an emergency. From others, maybe it is. The fact of the matter is the president wants to get something done at the border. You've got a Congress that is going out of their way to restrict any power that Trump wants to yield or wield. Whereas, of course, under Obama, they were willing to expand the powers of the executive because they didn't like that the Republicans were trying to stop the president. This is all about inconsistency. Now, the media, incredibly consistent. The media immediately jumped after Trump. NBC's Peter Alexander, for example, who is not a friend of this White House, tried to position this as, oh, well, this shows you that you failed in your negotiations.
In the past, when President Obama tried to use executive action as it related to immigration, you said the whole concept of executive order, it's not the way the country's supposed to be run. You said you're supposed to go through Congress and make a deal. Will you concede that you were unable to make the deal that you had promised in the past and that the deal you're ending up with now from Congress is less than what you could have had before a 35-day shutdown?
I went through Congress. I made a deal. I got almost $1.4 billion when I wasn't supposed to get $1. Not $1. He's not going to get $1. Well, I got $1.4 billion.
And by the way, this is an important point here because the Democrats did, in fact, say exactly what he just did, what he just said. You're not even going to get a dollar for a wall or a barrier or whatever it is you want to call it. Now, they decided to say we're not going to give you a dollar for a physical barrier the way that most people might think. And this is the reason why you've got the Democrats saying barrier and not wall, because they don't want to seem as if they failed in their promise not to deliver a dollar to border security. And the fact of the matter is, the president on that point, he's right here. He didn't get what he wanted. He didn't get all that he wanted. But he didn't get much more than the Democrats said they were willing to get. So to call him out and say, oh, this shows failure, you can't negotiate.
But I'm not happy with it. I also got billions and billions of dollars for other things. Port of entries, lots of different things. The purchase of drug equipment, more than we were even requesting. In fact, the primary fight was on the wall. Everything else, we have so much, as I said, I don't know what to do with it. We have so much money. But on the wall, they skimped. So I did. I was successful in that sense, but I want to do it faster. I could do the wall over a longer period of time. I didn't need to do this, but I'd rather do it much faster.
Now, he should not have said that last line. I'm sure he's going to spin it a little bit, but he should not have said, I did not need to do this. I know the intent of what he meant, but he's given an opening to Democrats to say, oh, well, if you didn't need to do this now, then why'd you call for a state of emergency? What he clearly meant was he could wait a long time to get this done. However, if he did, it wouldn't address the emergency we have at the border. He should have been more careful with that language, because I've already seen Chuck Schumer going after him with this, and others are going after him with this in the media. So he should have been a little bit more careful. I'm curious from your perspective, because not all Republicans are happy with this. In fact, Ann Coulter called the president out. We're going to hear from her a little bit later on in the show. Do you like this bill? Do you like this compromise that was passed yesterday? And do you like the declaration of emergency? Send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We got a text that said, personally, I think the Democrats made this wall a bigger deal. And you're right. They clearly did, because at the end of the day, $6 billion or $5 billion is not a lot of money that the president was asking for. It's not. And they decided to make this a big campaign issue. And I don't think it's going to work out for the Democrats. 1-800-465-877. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
So Representative Mia Gregerson, she's a Democrat from SeaTac. She's got a bill that she introduced that would stop cities and counties from, quote unquote, criminalizing homelessness, which is basically a know-nothing term. That doesn't mean anything. That is a term that really doesn't mean anything beyond that she wants you to let out-of-control homelessness run cities, or overrun cities, I suppose, take over neighborhoods. Whether we're talking about SeaTac or Everett or Seattle or Tacoma, her bill would mean you can't ticket or otherwise sanction folks who are illegally camped out when no other option exists to house them. Meaning, if there's no beds in a shelter available, you can't tell someone who's living out on the streets that you've got to move or you face a ticket. The thing is, the truth of all of this is, beds always exist. Beds always exist. There is always some place for someone who is homeless to go. They may be inconvenienced a little bit, but you know what? I would rather the person who's living illegally be slightly inconvenienced than you guys be inconvenienced in a big way every single day. Because you should not have to jump over human waste in the middle of a sidewalk or make sure there are no needles in the sandbox that your kids are playing at. Sorry, I know that maybe some folks on the left don't like that position of mine, but that's where I am. Now, she gave a comment that was quoted saying, what we can talk about today is putting a plan together so that no one is a throwaway person, and where no community is a throwaway community. We can no longer crunch enough numbers or legislate our way out of this. We must face the crisis head on. She's not facing the crisis head on. No one is saying that we think homeless people are throwaway people. No one is saying that. The fact is, letting someone sleep in filth, it's kind of treating them as throwaway people. So maybe you should get a harsher look at your own positions. Some people say it's okay for people to sleep wherever it is they want, surrounded by human waste and filth. And you're claiming that the ones who want to clean that up and give people help, that we view them as throwaway people. Now, thankfully, in this case, the governor doesn't seem to support this bill, at least according to the Olympian. They quoted Jim Baumgart. He's a senior policy advisor on human services for the governor. And he said the bill in its current form severely limits state agencies in their ability to have influence over the time, place, and manner of use of the space that's in their care. This results in concerns over public health, public safety, worker safety, and facilities management. So on this, it seems like the governor is in the right spot. Thankfully, he's in the right spot. Because remember, thanks to the last election, the results of the last election, Republicans don't have much power to stop things like this. But this should tell you how far to the left some folks are going. Because even the governor, his office, has concerns with this bill. That's good news. It'd be better news if all of us stayed on this and made damn sure that a bill like this doesn't get enough support to get into actual effect. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Happy Friday. Hey, get this. Producer Tom wrote a blog. If you want to read it, give him some support. The same support you offer. Well, don't give him the same support you offer me. You can offer him a quarter of the concern and the support. He doesn't need to get greedy. Text the keyword Tom to 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you a link to his blog. What is it on?
Ted Bundy and serial killers.
Oh, that sounds like light reading.
It's
Friday light? Is that what that is?
You might need to, yeah, take 15 minutes of your day, get emotionally prepared, and go for it.
There you go. Text T-O-M, Tom, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link over to his blog. In the meantime, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It is Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies thanks to our brand new sponsor for our movie reviews, Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. The big weekend release is Isn't It Romantic? It's the latest rom-com and a long string of Valentine's Day releases, but this one does it right. And by right, I mean it completely mocks and has fun with all the previous romantic comedies we know and love. Rebel Wilson plays the jaded Natalie. She has no hopes for love, blind to the coworker who's in love with her, played by Adam Devine. And she's just kind of like a downer. But then she gets a head injury. And she wakes up in a world that she absolutely hates. She's living the life of a romantic comedy.
Come on, you're going crazy.
I hit my head really hard, and I woke up in this alternate universe.
And now I have a gay sidekick who's setting gay rides back like 100 years.
I love working the legs.
Jesus! And guys looking me in the eyes.
You're quite beguiling, aren't you?
Are you feeling what I'm feeling?
No!
Oh, my God.
I think I'm trapped in a... become a romantic comedy.
So she's got it all. She's got the gay sidekick. She's got the perfect apartment. She's got a big dance number, a makeover montage, and of course an extremely hot rich dude who's absolutely in love with her. That role is played by Liam Hemsworth, of course, Thor. But she's still unhappy. And like most romantic comedies, she has to make someone fall in love with her in order to escape the hell that she's trapped in. I absolutely, positively loved this film. I loved Isn't It Romantic. The cast overall is outstanding. This is a genuinely funny movie. And like some perfect rom-coms, I love this. It's about 90 minutes. That makes me happy. This is a perfect Valentine's Day film, which generally when we say, oh, is it a good V-Day film? We have the bar set a little bit lower. We get some extra points just for being the right movie at the right time. But I'm saying if you take that completely out of the equation, Isn't It Romantic manages to be very funny, very charming, and I absolutely loved it. And I've spoken to some people who saw it earlier in the week since it did come out on Wednesday. We all have the exact same position, which is we kind of want to see it again. And that's what I love about really good romantic comedies. I can see Love Actually or You've Got Mail or Sleepless in Seattle. I can see that over and over and over and over again, and I still absolutely will enjoy it. That's kind of how I'm feeling with Isn't It Romantic. Now, I haven't tested it yet. I've only seen it once, but I do want to see it again, which means I recommend Isn't It Romantic. It's out now. It's rated PG-13. You should definitely check it out. Again, perfect date movie, but not necessarily exclusively a date movie. This works whenever you see it. Go see Isn't It Romantic? It's out now. What movie are you going to see this weekend? Text me on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. 8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Follow up.
So we've been following the story of the Edmunds baker, Ken Bellingham, who decided to have the audacity to put a message on a cookie that one customer was triggered by. Simply build the wall. That's all it said. It was on a Valentine's Day cookie. We're now after Valentine's Day. Presumably this goes away. Maybe another cookie will have a different remark on it. We don't know. We'll wait and see. But what is particularly of concern is that the city of Edmonds, through their diversity commission, decided to go after this baker, not by name, but very clearly go after him in a way that could potentially chill speech. And then once they got called out about it, as we did just a few days ago, they're now lying about what it is they did. They're now lying. Now, if you want to read their lie, if you want to support this baker, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to my blog. Just to give you a quick reminder, they wrote in part on their Facebook page, a couple weeks ago, our community was negatively impacted by a business owner's choice to spread a divisive and, for some, hurtful message. While we are aware that speech is protected by our First Amendment, words have consequences. Words can be hurtful and divisive, but also can unite, embrace, and welcome people into a community. So after they got a whole bunch of flack for that deeply irresponsible post, they put up a follow-up. A follow-up that is just an abject lie. There's no other way to say it. They are just flat-out lying. And it's offensive because they think you're stupid enough to fall for this. This is the follow-up. Regarding Tuesday's message from the Diversity Commission, it was definitely not the intent to focus on any particular business or individuals, but rather to counter the negative comments that had arisen over the past couple of weeks and instead spread a message of inclusion and acceptance. The city apologizes if the message was taken as a direct affront to any particular individuals and hope that, again, the message of inclusion and acceptance will prevail. That is the biggest lie I think I've ever seen come out of a government agency's mouth. They clearly targeted the business. They literally referenced a business. There was no other story that happened in the city of Edmonds that they could be referring to. They were going after specifically the bakery because they didn't like the political message. And to claim now, oh, that wasn't the intent. Yeah, it exactly was the intent. But let's push that even aside. This is a problem because you've got a government agency coming out and saying you shouldn't take a position that might anger someone, that might upset someone, including us on this diversity commission. What does that mean? What does that mean? Very simply, think about the business owner that might want to make a political statement in the city of Edmonds. Now they're fearful. They're going to be called out and targeted by a government agency, or in this case, a diversity commission, which is a hop, skip, and a jump away from the office that has enforcement power over the very business owner and his or her particular message. So now, before they feel comfortable speaking out on immigration or gay marriage or abortion or whatever, they're going to have to think, is this going to upset a government agency? Am I going to be targeted by a government agency that has enforcement power over my business? Maybe I shouldn't say anything at all. Maybe I should keep my mouth shut. I know I have the right, but I'm just going to get called out by this government agency and I don't want to cause any problems. Okay, yeah, I won't do anything. They essentially talk themselves out of getting involved. It is wrong. It is absolutely wrong for a government agency to get involved in political speech like this. It's one thing if a customer, maybe a passerby, ends up going online and calling you out like the woman who was triggered by the cookie to begin with. That's part of doing business. But it is dangerous if it's coming from an arm of the government that actually oversees you. The city of Edmonds is supposed to be content neutral, even if the fringe progressives feel like they've grabbed this foothold of power inside the city government. It's absolutely outrageous. If you want to support the baker, and if you want to call out the city of Edmonds, right now, take out your phone, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Is now the time to revisit whether or not we should regionalize the state's minimum wage rate? Meaning, does a $13, $14, $15 an hour minimum wage make sense in Seattle, but also in Longview or perhaps in Walla Walla, where my next guest is from? Joining me on the line to talk about his plan to at least study the idea of regionalizing our minimum wage is the 16th Legislative District State Representative Skylar Rood of Walla Walla. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, thanks, Jason. I appreciate it.
Glad so, obviously, you make a point that Western Washington, Eastern Washington, remarkably different cost of living, and it seems a little weird that we're saying what works in Seattle would work in Walla Walla.
I agree 100%. It's kind of a typical tactic, I think, out of Olympia. It's, you know, one legislature for the whole state, and laws that are passed typically are tend to be one size fits all. So we need to work to make sure that we're not doing that when it's harmful to different areas of the state.
How is it harmful?
I'm thinking of cities in my district. The smaller ones, Walla Walla is the biggest. Waitsburg, Dayton, Dixie, Touche. These are really small towns, and the cost of living is a lot lower. If I was to go house shopping in Seattle, I don't know what I'd be spending $500,000, $600,000 for the same property. That would be $150,000 to $250,000 in my area. So when the cost of living is significantly lower, the dollar goes a lot farther.
Have businesses come to you to express their concern, or is this you acting proactively?
I have heard concerns from businesses, also service organizations that provide services on behalf of the state, and they're just saying that they can't. The rates that they're paid for those services don't really keep up with the cost of labor, which is, as you know, is supposed to go up another dollar an hour next year.
Mm-hmm.
$13.50. So retaining employees becomes difficult at that point when you have that wage issue. So I think another population that seems to be overlooked in this conversation would be individuals that are on fixed income, whether that's individuals with disabilities or retired people who don't get a cost of living adjustment. So when labor costs go up and prices of goods goes up in grocery stores, for example, their cost of living goes up, but mm-hmm. their fixed income is obviously the same. And so I think we have lost buying power of our dollar.
And this whole idea of a regional minimum wage, we don't have to look too far to see how it works. In fact, in Oregon, they do something very similar.
That's correct. I think they have three regions in Oregon. What I'd be interested in doing is looking into. Well, actually, that's why I would do a study. I'm not in a place right now where I'd be ready to drop a bill that would implement regionalizing. But I think it's important to look at and be thoughtful in our approach to this. So I've been in contact with the Employment Securities Department about this, and the study would likely direct them to conduct the study and provide a recommendation to the legislature so we can figure out what geographic areas we're using.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And is that really what it's about, the study? Because we already know the answer to whether or not it makes sense to treat Seattle the same way as Kelso. Like, right, we already know the answer mm-hmm. to that is no, that it doesn't make sense. So is the point of a study to figure out how this might be implemented by a regional basis, meaning let's figure out which districts/regions would be considered as one so that we can come up with a wage that makes sense?
Right. I agree. I think that's a really good point. I think regionalization is appropriate, but how we implement it is really what's on the table for discussion.
Is this something you think you're going to get bipartisan support with?
I do. I am working with a Democrat on it right now. It's not something that we're going to see. We may see something in the form of a proviso or a study bill this year, But really, I think the change in policy is going to take potentially a year or two.
Okay.
If the political will existed to freeze the minimum wage jump that's scheduled to go up to $13.50, I would certainly support that. I just don't think it's there with the current makeup of the legislature.
Just joining me, we're talking with State Representative Skylar Rood from Walla Walla. He's a Republican, about his idea to study the regionality possibilities for a minimum wage. And obviously, Representative, there are a lot of other issues that are being discussed that you're going to be voting on likely within the coming weeks, if not months. One of the issues is measles vaccinations. There's obviously a lot of people who have recently been contracted measles. It's a, you know, a disease that could potentially be deadly if not treated, depending on the health of the individual. One of the bills would get rid of a personal or philosophical exemption in order to opt out of the combined measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. What's your position on that?
I won't be supporting that bill. I think that, we'll just backtrack a little bit. We know that there's data that's collected on the negative or the adverse effects of vaccines. I'm not the kind of person who's advocating people don't get vaccines, but the federal government collects data on injury, and they actually have a compensation program that is funded through a tax on vaccines to pay for the damages that are caused from vaccines. So when we know that there's a potential for damage, I'm not comfortable taking away that choice from a parent. So I think allowing the exemption and letting a parent make the choice on what kind of medicines are being introduced into their child's body is really important.
Should a school, a public school, have the right to say no to a student coming in and being enrolled if they're unwilling to get a vaccine?
I don't think so. The K-12 system is a constitutional right that is granted. We know after the McCleary case that it's the paramount duty of the state to provide for ample provision for the education of all children in the state. So I'm not comfortable taking away constitutional rights from children over something like vaccination.
Another issue.
I think providing,
Oh, no, go ahead, please.
I just think that providing education is fundamental, and I'm not willing to go there.
Another issue that's being discussed right now is whether or not we should go all in banning the use of the death penalty. Is this a position that you support, or do you think that the death penalty in some cases should still remain on the table?
It's a pretty complicated or a loaded question. I think there are crimes that are appropriately punished with the death penalty. For example, somebody rapes and murders a person. The death penalty is appropriate. Where I think it gets a little complicated is I don't want to wrongfully convict and wrongfully execute someone because the death is irreversible. So it's not really an issue of whether it's just or unjust to execute someone. I feel like there are cases where it is, but right now the death penalty in effect is repealed, through a court case. I don't think introducing another bill to remove it from the books necessarily will do anything.
Well, there's a bill that's being introduced right now that's being considered, at least on the Senate side, that would essentially say if there's someone who's already doing time, they're already in jail, and they commit a murder, all of those cases would automatically trigger a review, and that person would then be up for the death penalty, which goes to address some of the concerns that proponents have raised, which is that the system is flawed because it disproportionately targets folks. So this bill says, no, we're going to give everyone who's committed a murder or is accused of murder, you get a review.
So last year, there was a bill to repeal the death penalty, and that was the one area where I thought there should be a carve-out. If an individual is already in prison for life and they murder a correctional officer, applying another life sentence on top of a life sentence doesn't do anything in practice. So where's the justice in that? And I told proponents of the death penalty repeal back then that I would be willing to support a repeal if we had that carve out. So it's a complicated issue, but I think it was important to acknowledge that unique circumstance.
Yeah. Well, there you go. We've been talking with State Representative Skylar Root. He's a Republican from Walla Walla. If you want to join the conversation, weigh in on any of this, send us a text, 1-800-465-8770. Representative Root, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Welcome back to the Jason Rancho Live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Those text messages come in 1-800-465-8770. If you use the keyword rants, R-A-N-T-Z, I'll send you a link to my latest blog about how the city of Edmonds is trying to silence political speech that they don't agree with by going after the baker of the Build the Wall cookies and then following up with a total lie, an abject lie, after they got caught with their very transparent strategy to try to bully and silence people who disagree with them via their diversity commission. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770 if you want to help support that baker by shining a spotlight on what's happening in the city of Edmonds. There's a story that kind of broke about an hour and a half ago by the Seattle Times. It has to do with Tim Iman. He, of course, is the anti-tax activist. He's been on the show many times. He's a friend of the show. He is under investigation for stealing an office chair from a Lacey Office Depot. And it's an incredibly bizarre story. It's incredibly bizarre. And I'm going to assume that there is something more to this story. I'm going to assume that maybe, just maybe, Tim Iman has a reason for what it is we are witnessing on this video, where he clearly is walking into an Office Depot in Lacey. He wanders around the kind of the lobby area of the Home Depot, and he's looking around almost suspiciously, almost like it seems he's wondering if anyone is watching him. Then he goes into the vestibule of the Home Depot. He sits down in an office chair that's there for sale. He leans back. He spins around three times. And then he literally walks out with the chair. He just walks out with the chair. Now, according to the Seattle Times, about a minute later, Tim Iman returned to the same store where he printed and scanned some documents, exchanged a printer, and bought two new ones for $249, according to a Lacey police report. A store employee, as quoted in this report, said, "He acted wary when I told him I would help him take the printers out to the car. When we got to his vehicle, he insisted I leave the printers on the ground next to his vehicle." Then the Times continues, "Store employees, upon noticing that the chair in the vestibule was gone, checked their surveillance videos. The store manager identified Iman based on his phone number, payment method, and his name in the store's loyalty system." Now, we reached out to Tim. I'd love to have him on the show to explain what happened. He did not respond to calls from the Seattle Times, but he did just email me at 3:17 to say, "I just called the Lacey Office Depot, who referred me to the Lacey Police Department. I am expecting a call from the officer in charge to explain what happened. I will cooperate fully in this process and will do whatever required of me." This is weird. So we bought two printers for $249, and yet he stole, or at least appears to have stolen, a $70 office chair. There's got to be something left that we don't know about in this story, right? Just maybe something. I'm not entirely sure I know what it could be, right? There's got to be something. But it kind of just seems like he stole an office chair.
Yeah, it's kind of walked out with it.
But why would you steal a $70? Because part of me was thinking to myself, okay, he's gone through bankruptcy, so he's clearly having some money problems. A lot of this has to do with the fact that he's being targeted by the state of Washington and Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Maybe he's tight on money, and he decides to steal an office chair for $70. But then you're buying a $249 printers, so you've got some money.
Yeah, and we've both seen the video. There were better chairs to have stolen.
Oh, God, again with this.
It's not... It doesn't.
Oh, he doesn't stop.
It just doesn't look like a $70 chair.
Just complains about the weirdest things that have nothing to do with the story.
But you get what I'm saying, though. Why that
still
one?
I'm hung up on the stupid chair that costs only $70.
It looks like it's a $20 chair. I don't buy the whole $70 chair thing.
Okay. That's not the conspiracy. There's not a conspiracy here to pass along $20 office chairs as $70 office chairs. That's not what the story is about. He appears to have stolen it. I'm trying to figure out why. We put out the request. He's not going to come on. I hope he does. I just want to know what the explanation is. And I'm in that part. Like, I feel bad for Tim Iman. Because it looks like he stole this chair. It looks like he's struggling. I feel legitimately bad for him. He's going through a lot. And part of this, the argument will be, oh, he asked for it because he decided to be an anti-tax activist. I don't think he's asking for what's happening to him. I don't think he asked for the ridicule. He's going through a divorce as a result of all of this. He says due to the stress associated with the legal fights he's had to take. I'm going to open it up to texters on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. I would love to know, based on this story, what do you think is the reason behind, or what could be behind the, I'm calling it theft, but it's alleged theft of the office chair. Is it possible that it wasn't him stealing it?
He was wearing a campaign shirt.
It's clearly him. It's 100% him. He acknowledges that he's going to make the phone call at least. I suppose there could be a lookalike, but it's him. I'm saying, can there be another reasonable explanation as to why he took the chair out of the store vestibule that does not include theft? 1-800-465-8770. My sense is you're going to have to get incredibly creative to excuse this behavior away.
Well, maybe he didn't know that Home Depot was trying to sell the chair. I mean, it was, where it was. It was in the foyer. No one knows what that word is. I don't know what that word is, and I think I'm kind of smart. But the store foyer, it wasn't in the aisles. It wasn't in storage.
But you've gone into a store that in between, like, let's say outside of the store, there's some stuff on sale that clearly is for sale and it's not left out there for you to take. You just bring it inside and you pay for it, right? You've seen that. You don't think that that's a giveaway.
Again, if there's no price tag on it, it might not be for sale. Look,
okay,
it could have
okay,
just
hold
been
on,
any
hold
chair.
On. Okay, let's just say it didn't have a price tag on it. You still realize you can't just take the chair, right?
Well,
right?
I mean yeah. I'm not defending it. I'm trying to put myself in that mindset.
I am too, because I don't want, because again, if he's trying to steal a chair, I feel sad. I feel bad.
And if there was a price tag on it, do you think it was $70? Again, it does not look like a $70 chair.
Darren,
text in 800-465-8770. How much do you think that chair is worth?
No, don't do that. Darren from Renton said he had $70 store credit, Jason. Could that be it, that he thought he paid for it?
Maybe. That's buy two printers, get one chair.
Yeah, like there was a special deal going on. 1-800-465-877 if you want to weigh in on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. We still got a lot to get to. Congressman Adam Smith, the Democrat from right here in Seattle, is going to stop by at 5:30 with his take on the emergency declaration, anti-Semitism on the left, and his support for the new Green Deal. We're going to hear his perspective later on in the show. It's the Jason Rancho.